And we've been talking quite a bit about what immunity from the coronavirus will look like. And with that, one historian says we can glean lessons from the South about how quickly immunity can turn into a form of privilege. Cities like New Orleans, where yellow fever back in the late 1800s killed 10% of the population nearly every summer, developing immunity was known locally as the baptism of citizenship. Those who had gotten sick and survived were at the top, while the uninitiated weren't able to get jobs or insurance. They were basically at the bottom. For more, we have historian Catherine Olivares. She's an assistant history professor at Stanford University, whose forthcoming book is called Necropolis. Catherine, welcome to Here and Now.
Hi there.
So your work looks at the South in the 1800s between the Louisiana Purchase and the Civil War. New Orleans, which we know is suffering so much right now with the coronavirus, went through no fewer than 22 epidemics of yellow fever. What did that look like back then?
Well, it was miserable, to say the least. Yellow fever is a mosquito-borne virus, and this could be a very disorienting time in New Orleans, any epidemic. People fled if they could. They would leave the crowded streets and the crowded houses, and they would go very often into the countryside if they had the opportunity to do so. Many people, however, also, you know, had no choice but to remain in very cramped dwellings. And especially if you were an enslaved person, you wouldn't have a choice whether or not you had the privilege of being able to social distance.
Yeah, yeah. The crux of your argument is that in addition to all of these hierarchies we know about race and class in the South, there was also this third one. You argue it was immunity. Explain what you mean by this.
So I think probably many people are familiar with the main and the major, very pernicious racial hierarchy of the South, and especially New Orleans, in which you have white people on the top of the social hierarchy, legally and socially and culturally and economically dominant. Then you have free people of color, and then you have enslaved people. But you also have this sort of alternate invisible hierarchy at work in which you have acclimated citizens, so-called, people who have survived yellow fever and become acclimated, as they called it then. And then beneath these people, you have unacclimated strangers, people in this sort of probationary period awaiting their brush with yellow fever. And then the last part of this hierarchy is the dead, the people who did not survive, people who failed in their attempt to get acclimated. And about 50% of people in the 19th century in New Orleans who fell sick with yellow fever would die during the acclimating process. So this hierarchy of immunity commingled with the racial hierarchy and the economic hierarchies of this town to create, to sort of exacerbate all of the existing inequalities, really sort of reshaping the society around the invisible microbial world.
You write about the desperation for gaining immunity. Foreigners who couldn't get a job or get life insurance because they were, quote, unacclimated. In other words, they weren't immune. And there are accounts of immigrants jumping into bed where a friend had just died so they could get it, so that they could hopefully develop immunity and get work. Unpack this a little for us. This sounds astounding.
Well, it's one of the sort of most astounding parts of this, which is that it shows how important acclimation was to your prospects going forward, that people would willingly risk their lives and really chance death. It's a 50-50 chance. So, you know, people, especially sort of recent white immigrants from the North, especially young men, you see these examples of them not avoiding but actively seeking yellow fever as a pathway to prosperity and, you know, so to endow themselves with a future and a political voice and to be taken seriously in this town. And this is important because you can't get a job unless you declare yourself that you are acclimated. You often can't live in certain places. Certain fathers would not let their daughters talk to unacclimated men because it was considered to be too risky. They didn't want their daughters to fall in love with a man who would die shortly from yellow fever. There's, you know, there's all these sort of social and civic impediments to life in this place if you are a white person and you are unacclimated.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. You brought up race. And I'm just thinking about how in a society that's already unequal during that time, immunity became just one more wedge that made all of the other forms worse. Can you give us examples of that?
Sure. So at this time, it was popularly believed, or at least it was said, that black people had innate resistance to yellow fever. It's not true. There's no basis for this in epidemiology. There was no such thing as innate black immunity to yellow fever. However, this was used as an example or as a sort of justification by many white slavers to say that black people should be doing the hardest work on plantations, in swamps, digging canals, working on the levee, because this would allow essentially whites to socially distance themselves from spaces that were dangerous. What's really striking, too, is to be described as acclimated was one of the most important descriptions in the slave market. And many, many slavers would not buy a person who was not absolutely declared acclimated. And this would raise the price of an enslaved person by about 25 to 50%.
I'm almost speechless because early on in this COVID-19 epidemic, we were hearing rumors that Black people could not contract the coronavirus. And so we're now seeing that Black Americans are dying at higher rates from COVID-19 in some places, immigrants serving on the front lines to provide essential services. I mean, there are direct parallels to what you've studied back then and what we're seeing today.
Oh, certainly. And this is precisely, you know, the sort of great danger and fear, which is that this disease, COVID, as in the case of yellow fever, ends up exacerbating all of the already pre-existing social, racial, economic forms of inequality that we have in our society, you know, making a bad situation into an even worse situation.
We're all thinking about this. I'm just also thinking about how we can take the steps to make certain that the question of immunity to COVID-19, which is so important, does not become a dystopian marker of status. I mean, how can we treat immunity ethically?
Oh, this is very, very tricky. And so, I mean, we're waiting out for a vaccine, essentially. You know, the only way that we're going to be able to sort of handle this in the long run is going to be through a vaccine, which we don't even know if that will be viable. We don't know when it will come exactly. It could be, you know, many months, maybe even many years. And then the question is about, you know, who gets the vaccine first? And that's, you know, a huge question in and of itself. And I can see the potential for, you know, maybe some people who have recovered from this disease can go and do some of the most essential jobs, caring for the elderly, going and working in hospitals, administering tests to people. Mm-hmm. This could be a really, I think, interesting and productive way of leveraging immunity on a society level. I am concerned, however, that if the past is any kind of evidence of this, that it becomes the impetus of individuals to sort of face this disease and become immune as they see it. Because without this immunity, they will be shut out of any kind of job or participation in society. And so what I'm concerned about seeing is people who cannot afford to socially distance or do not have jobs forced into choices that they should not have to be making, especially the most vulnerable among us already.
That's Catherine Olivares, an assistant history professor at Stanford University, talking with us about her upcoming book, Necropolis, and what the South's experience with the yellow fever can teach us about COVID-19. Catherine, thank you so much.
Thank you.